the seeing is it's a deep, because you will see with a different mind. You see with a silent mind, true mind, that is just aware. And most of the time is specific phenomenal awareness. It can be anchored to your kaya or physical movement, or externally to other living beings' physical movement. Then you have your mental flow, mental activity, mental movement. When your mind enters the deep, you can see them. It's like it's in slow motion for you to see, but actually it's still the same speed. But you can be aware. And that movement is like you are in charge. It doesn't run because your sati is so stable. Then you can also be aware of nature's phenomena. So all of nature's phenomena, whether it's the plant, the tree, the moving car, nature's vibration, or whatever tactile feeling, the nature within the environment, all this, you can experience them through your sati, through your awareness. Then you can be one with nature, one with everything. That is the meditative mind. And that meditative mind is just aware, silent, without thought. But to live life, you need to arise the thought. In that state, you can still live. When you need to arise, you arise. And thought is very different. It's no longer the agitated, heedless thought that simply think. This one is heedful living. There is heedfulness throughout. That's why it's very different. Okay, so keep that in mind. Yeah? Today one is for those who have already progressed, who can follow all this that I say and I share. So do go back and listen to it. Then you will progress to the next level of cultivation. All this, unless you meditate, you have developed the ability to be in a state of awareness or sati, you cannot understand. Otherwise you will use thought to think, to reflect. But that thing is not the actual sati. When you are in that state of sati, you will understand what I mean. Then you will have a lot of joy. Okay, now we turn to page 6. September 9th. So this one is the 24th. So there were some interesting stories from Sister Yunjang, Sister Adelie, and Sister Pamasuri covering Tudong on the highway. Meiji Amy's encounter with the ghost, a Brahmin's obsession with orderliness within his rest house, etc. Then I told you all, whatever that is rigid is not the true Dhamma. True Dhamma stand up to investigation, and it is not rigid, because it is an understanding which accord and flow with condition, according to wisdom. Knowledge, opinion, and superstition, when attached to, make one rigid, and especially knowledge. Then Sister Pamasuri shared her recent retreat experience in Thailand on issues she learned and faced while there. She shared how she experienced good mind state and also how she deal with fear while there. Bradil shared that fear can be confronted with understanding to develop the wisdom. Chanting Metta Sutta to overcome fear must be done with understanding, like I explained earlier on. Better to find out first as to how chanting this Metta Sutta can help. Bradil shared a real-life example of how this can be done. He shared how he resolved an episode in 1989 when his son on one occasion made crying sound while in his sleep, which was related to the premature death of his third child due to rubella. At that time, the school, my wife's school, they inject rubella inoculation for all the teachers and students. Then we didn't know within 6 months you cannot conceive, otherwise the baby will be affected. So this is for people who are trying to have baby. Yeah? Remember this one. So some months before the incident. Eh? For details on the story and other story about non-human encounter and superstition shared during the class, please listen to the recording. Brother Theo, oh, should be also, also shared how Dhamma can be applied to help them, to help resolve such problem, eh? Problem concerning non-humans and superstition, etc. Chanting is merely a skillful means to keep calm and do away with the fear, but it is usually not a foolproof solution. So it's just a skillful means to keep you calm. But most of the time when you are in the midst of fear, your chanting also becomes not stable or not smooth. But at least it can give you some faith. But it's not a permanent solution. It's just a skillful means to calm you down, to pacify your fear. To apply the Dhamma, one needs to remember or understand that fear is not intrinsic in you. If fear arises, stay with the fear. Or whatever emotion, may be anger, hatred, etc. When you can be silent without thought and able to be with the fear, fear will dissipate and finally cease because it is dependent originating a causal phenomenon born of delusion. That's why when you are deluded, when you don't understand your thought project and it stirs the mind into fear, sometimes restlessness, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. So all this can happen. So when you have the stability of sati and mindfulness to just aware, you try it out, you understand, you will develop a lot of understanding. After realizing this in the meditation, then inquire, investigate it. Only then will you be able to develop the stable contemplative wisdom or understanding to overcome fear. It is the thought that fear. Sankara movement is a projection of thought due to self-delusion. And this is what conditions your fear. If you are just aware without the wrong thought, fear will cease. You remember? What are wrong thought? Thought that condition your fear, worry, anxiety. These are all wrong thought. Because out of ignorance, you project your thought. You are scared of the unknown, fearful of the unknown. That's why it creates fear. That's why without wisdom, without understanding, you cannot free your mind. Then point number 9. Only virtue, born of cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path, can protect you. All your merits, born of your virtuous thoughts, speech and action, can really protect you. Example, importance of right speech. Wrong speech not only offend people, but also non-human. It will also condition karmic negativity. Then number 10, non-human also have delusion. They are without a physical form, so they can't really harm you. But they are capable of intensifying your fear. That's why without fear, you don't have to worry about them. So keeping calm, having faith in Triple Gem and do not fear is very important. Point number 11. Sister Alicia asks, whether fear is response to accumulated memory, habitual tendency, phobia, and conditioning. Then I answer, the form and mind is not you. Investigate into this statement. Before fear arise, there was no fear. So who fear? What fear? Trace its origination factor via mindfulness. So this will lead you to understand that fear is born of ignorance, is a movement of thought. When you don't have the understanding, the ignorance, the delusion will trigger off fear. So thought is response to memory. When you accumulate all the wrong memory, what happened? Like your phobia, your scars of memory, your fear, your worry, your anxiety. So when you recall through memory, thought arise. That's like your condition, your emotion, based on whatever accumulated fear that you have accumulated in the past, especially your scars of memory, your insecurity, your fear of the unknown, then your like and dislike and other things. Then point number 13. Srila Padma Suri share moments in the retreat when she is able to maintain clear awareness, feeling relaxed and natural. Relative caution kayamata not to grasp or seek the conditioned state. It doesn't mean anything if it does not. Sorry, if you don't know how to make use of it to benefit your cultivation. So whatever good meditative experience or mind state that you experience in a retreat, yeah, or in a way place, if it cannot bring about wisdom, then it's just a conditioned state, nothing more than that. So this one is a very important reminder. That's why I put there caution. Point number 15. Make use of that mind state or the silent inner awareness to reflect and contemplate the Dhamma, to develop the understanding and cultivate heedfulness, which is ever mindful and constantly meditative. This is the state of mind you should have throughout the day, every day. Not only when you are in a retreat, which is a conditioned state, there is a temporary induced state, mind state, induced by the conducive environment and tranquil setting that are made for you. Then point number 16. The daily religious routine is very important. And constantly listening to Dhamma, cultivating Noble Eightfold Path to develop first, second, and third turning wisdom. Reflect and contemplate, inquire, straighten your view, and apply this understanding while in the midst of life until it is part of your nature, until the Noble Eightfold Path factors become your embodiments, until your character, your personality as the embodiments of this Noble Eightfold Path factors. So this one is a very good summary. And the above short note draft was prepared by Sister Sui, my daughter. Her understanding is very good. That's why I don't have to do much editing. I just smoothen the whatever she write. And point number 16 is very important. He summarized everything that I spoke that you have to do. If you follow this, you will definitely awaken. The daily religious routine is to develop your daily mindfulness, to stabilize it. Then constantly listening to the Dhamma, that is to cultivate initial wisdom. First, second, turning wisdom, yudiso, manasakara. Then after that, cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. That is what the turning is all about. Then reflect and contemplate, inquire, straighten your view. This is stabilizing the initial wisdom. And apply this understanding while in the midst of life until it is part of you, part of your nature. Until you embody all the Noble Eightfold Path practice. So if you can do this, you are destined for enlightenment. You not only eat food, you constantly meditative, constantly listening to the Dhamma, constantly cultivating the three turnings for the Four Noble Truths. Okay? Any question? Can follow? Yeah. If you can follow, means you are good. And if you want to know the further detail, you go to the video file and the audio file. Now, we have this video file. It helps because I receive a lot of feedback. They say nowadays it's so easy. They don't have to actually physically be present in the class, but they can see from the video more clearly. Sometimes like you come to the class, you sit PC there. She cannot see me because of the pillar block. Then sometimes I write on the whiteboard. Not everybody can see depending on which angle you are sitting. But no problem. If you are here in the class, then when you see the video, you understand better. You understand? Because when you are here, you know what is happening. Because Jin Hao's video, he just takes certain part out. Understand? He didn't give you the whole 2-hour class. That is in the audio file. He takes the important topic, he put a heading there, because he learned from YouTube, I think. If it's too long, people don't like. Sometimes they listen to topic that doesn't interest them. But it's short script. Unless it's very good, continuous one, like the SJBA talk. On the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. That one, the whole video was almost the whole talk. But and yet people listened attentively. That one got the most hit. So far, 400 over people view already. The feedback was very good. So we should thank all those people who help us to do all this. Especially Jin Hao, Brother Tim Kama Suri, Christy Dale. And many other Kalimitas. And all Kalimita who donated to the purchase of this video cam. It's quite cheap. We got it at a special discount. I think Jin Hao told me about 3,000 or 3,000 plus. It's actually a very good camera. Very sharp. The focus and all those things. So this one really meant to be. We also don't know that the video can come out so well. And we only started since the retreat in March. That time no video cam. That time just, I think, handphone. Then Christy later on brought a camera. So that's how we started. Then through trial and error, luckily, Jin Hao pick up a lot of things on the YouTube. It seems this YouTube is very interesting. They teach you a lot of things. You can learn a lot of things from YouTube. But they also need you to put in things that can make their website very popular. And it seems they pay you, you become very popular. A lot of other things. Then we have the books also. We have put in 4 books, I think, in the Amazon.com. And so a lot of things can be useful to people, helpful to people. So you can make use of our website, then go to the YouTube, then go and review some of the books that we put on the Amazon.com. You will be very, very amazed. By what we have achieved. That's why we achieve a lot of great milestone. Every year we really develop something very unique and very beautiful. Even the Dhamma itself has transformed so much over the years. Okay, if you don't have any questions, then we turn to page 588 and continue from there. I think we were at the topic, the 10 paramitas, parami. 588 is the second parami. First we had dana, now it's sila. Combined with this supernormal generosity of a bodhisattva, is his virtuous conduct, sila, morality. The meaning of the Pali term is discipline. They use the word discipline. Means you discipline yourself. But precept or sila is not really discipline. It is a training rule that you undertake because you understand the importance of precept. So it's not to discipline you or make life difficult for you. It is out of love and compassion for you that the Buddha introduced the precept and advised you to keep them, not to break them. Because when you reflect and contemplate on precept, you understand. That's the reason why I always advise you all, don't do things without understanding. You just accept because the Buddha asked you to keep precept. Then you try to keep precept, but you don't understand the reason behind. And you cannot do it. You can't do it well. Because you are only doing it according to knowledge, which is not effective. So you should inquire, why did the Buddha say I must keep precepts? And what are these fine precepts? Why did he say I need to undertake the training rule to abstain from killing and causing harm to fellow living beings, which is the first precept? So when you reflect and inquire, you will know. You inquire by asking, who will kill and harm people? What type of human being is that? Then you will come to know through life experience. Selfish people, violent people, authoritative people, people who are crazy for power, and also deluded people. They can kill, they can harm because of selfish reason, because of anger, because of pride. So all this will lead you to the conclusion that the people who kill and harm, they have the three evil roots of greed. Greed is selfishness. Hatred is emotion. Anger, hatred, violence. So all these are very negative. Then delusion means they don't have understanding. They have a lot of delusion. They do not see the oneness of nature. All of humanity is one. All of consciousness is one. They fail to see this oneness nature within their existence. So they isolate themselves, they separate themselves, thinking that they exist separately. The I, the ego, the personality arise. And because of the ego roots arise. And when you think you exist, then you want to own things, you want to possess things, you want to take charge of things. So the greed, the selfishness, the emotional negativity, it will arise. And when you cannot understand certain things or when things don't go your way, through your delusion, you will have fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, remorse and all these things. So from the ego roots arise. So if you have contemplated, reflected and developed such understanding, then you will know why the Buddha want me to keep the precept of non-killing straight away you will come to the conclusion, it is out of love and compassion for me that he advised us all to keep the first precept. If you keep the precept, you will not create negativity of karma, no major evil, no downfall. Otherwise, when it comes to friction, if you kill people and harm people, people will kill you, will harm you when there is condition. So people who are born into the world, sometimes they have short life. They suffer. They become miserable. It's because they didn't keep this precept properly. They constantly violate this precept, break this precept. That's why they will be afflicted by it, the friction of it. You reap what you sow. Do good begets good. Do evil begets evil. You plant the seed of evil, you will reap the fruit of evil. So sila is not really discipline. Sila is a moral understanding. It's morality that you keep to protect yourself, to protect others. When you keep your precept, you not only protect yourself from evil, because you are incapable of evil, you also protect others from being harmed by you or hurt by you. So you can check the other precept. The second precept, we undertake the training rule to abstain from telling lies or stealing, taking things that doesn't belong to us. You check who will do that. Selfish people, deluded people, people who don't have right view, who don't believe in the law of karma, who only believe in themselves. Then the third precept, we undertake the training rule not to commit sexual misconduct. Who will do that? Lustful people, selfish people, deluded people. That's why the evil roots are there. And you do this to others when there is condition in future life or sometimes in this life, it will hit back at you. That's what the law of karma is all about. And if you are to tell lie, the fourth precept, or arise the four type of wrong speeches, there are karmic implications too. And you will also suffer. Then the last precept is, we undertake the training rule to abstain from taking intoxicant and drug that can make our consciousness very low. When your consciousness is affected, you will violate all the other precepts. That's why the fifth precept is the worst to break. If you break the one you break, the possibility of breaking all precepts is very high. So never allow yourself to break that precept or get yourself entangled with drugs, with all the intoxicant, liquor, drinks and all those things. So this is what sila is all about. It's about morality, keeping to the moral code, following the law of karma. When you understand this with right view, you will know how to live your life. You will not allow your life to go to waste. You will not be heedless anymore. You will not do all those wrong things. That's why meditation is about training your mind to be aware, to be mindful. Why? To be aware of what? First is the teaching. What constitutes evil? Greed, hatred and delusion. Expand on it. Then when you are aware, you can be aware of this evil root when they arise. That's why you can develop sense restraint. Without awareness, sati sampajana, without the initial wisdom, the understanding of the essential dukkha, you cannot keep your precept. It's impossible. There is no sense restraint. That's why mindfulness is very important, to be sensitive, to allow you to see, to understand all this. Then only you can arise the four right effort to keep your precept, to abandon all the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong livelihood. Then the second right effort is to prevent them from arising. Then the third effort is to cultivate the ennobler, the right thought, right speech, and right action that are still not in you. Then the fourth right effort is the right effort to refine upon this right thought, right speech, right action that you have already developed until you can perfect them. So all this four right effort is very conducive for training. Then after that, you develop purification of mind. So the advice of the Buddha comes about is because there is this law of karma. When the Buddha understands this law, he introduced that Dhammapada verse 183, where all Samasambuddha, when they come, they give the same advice. In Pali, it's very beautifully stated, Sabba papasa akaranam kusalesa upasampadam sachitta pariyuttapanam etang buddhana sansana. So all Buddha give the same advice. Sabbe is all, papasa is evil, akaranam, yeah, they want all evil. How do they want evil? All evil. Keep precepts. Otherwise you can't. Then, kusalesa, kusala, wholesomeness, upasampada. Wherever there is condition to do wholesomeness, do. That's cultivating noble evil path. Right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, so that you can be a blessing to all, right livelihood, so that you can develop more and more wholesomeness, more and more meritorious actions. Then the last one is sacitta pariyodhapana. Citta is mind. Pariyodhapana is purify the mind. And these are all the advice of all Buddhas. So sacitta pariyodhapana and then etang buddhana sasana, advice of all Buddhas. So precept is very important. It also is one of the 10 meritorious actions. And you have to develop it until it becomes a perfection. That's why you have sila, parami. Okay, adding on. It consists of duties that one should perform, charita, and abstainance, which one should practice. Varita, these two are good. Duty means duty towards the law of nature, especially the law of karma. You must perform your duty. So when you perform your duty, it means you have to keep your precept. If you violate the nature's law, means you are not keeping precept. But if you do your duty in accordance with nature's law, you will automatically keep your precept. So here when he says it consists of duty that one should perform, charita is correct. And abstainance means you have to abstain from killing, causing suffering and other things. Varita. So you should cultivate these precepts of abstainance. These duties towards your parents, your children, your husband or your spouse, teacher, pupils, friends, monks, subordinate, etc. are described in detail in the Sikha Lovada Sutta. This is a very good sutta for householder. It teaches you how to live life and the duties of parents also. So this one is very good. It's written there. The duties of a layman are described in a series of relationships. What is this word? Mnemonic reason. What is the meaning? Anybody know the meaning? Of five items. This one is from the Sikha Lovada Sutta. anyway, Google and find out. Anybody got it? You know, you got it. I think the spelling is wrong. It should be mnemonic, is it? Why is that really? Oh yeah. A system such as a pattern of letter, idea or association, which assists in remembering something. Oh, okay. Now I know. So this one you must commit to memory, so that you can remember. The first one is a child should minister to his parent by. So these are your duty as a child towards your parent. How many of you have heard of this sutta before? Sigalo Wada. Yeah, quite a number. Can you remember? Duty of a child. First one is what? Yunjan, don't look at the book. Don't look at the book. First one is what? Very easy then.
Towards the parents.
Support. Support.
Independent, is working, has source of income, then support.
You see, a child should minister to his parent by supporting them, not only materialistically, you know, not supporting them in all aspects of life. You have to support them when they are sick, when they need your help, when they need your assistance, your care, your love, your whatever sacrifice and all those things. So you have to support them. So that support is the first duty. Then doing their duty is your duty as a child. What are your duty as a child?
Study.
Good. That is one of them. Then your parents also have duty. They're supposed to teach you certain things. Then when you have those understanding, you're supposed to perform your duty in return. So supporting your parent is one of the duty. Then they also, if I'm not wrong, you have to, even later on, you have to means, support your relative and all those things. Keeping the family lineage, this one also you have to do. But it's not so much of the Chinese tradition. The family lineage is the extended family and all those things. Acting in such a way as to be worthy of his inheritance, and furthermore, offering arms in honor of departed relative. Now, the last one is very important, to repay your parents' gratitude, or to repay your parents' sacrifice and all those things. So a lot of people, they don't know what to do, especially when their parents pass away. I say you cry, lament also no use. When they are around, why don't you do your duty? When they are gone, then the thought come and tell you, I shouldn't have ignored them, neglected. I should have been closer to them. I should have spent more time with them. All these are not a reality anymore. So when you have the Dhamma, you know what to do while they are around and they are still alive. That is more meaningful. That's why I hold their hand and talk to them. Give them love. Give them joy. Especially happiness and joy. Parents are very easy to be contented. Do you know that? As long as you are not naughty. As long as you don't simply do the funny thing. But if you can be successful, they will even have more joy. And they are very simple. They actually worry for you more than you worry for yourself. They worry about their children more because of attention. Parent be parent. But I have a few things to add. As parent, your duty is to give them the experience that you have developed to actually allow them to understand life in whatever way you understand it. But you have the Dhamma, it's better. But always remember, don't interfere with their life. Your duty as parent is to advise. After that, let them decide. Where is their life? Let them live. You have your experience. You need to do your duty, your part. Advise them. Counsel them. And tell them your experience. If it's for me, I would have done it this way. But your life, you decide. You need not follow my way. You can develop your own wisdom way, which could be better than mine. Then you can pass on the experience that you have so that they cut short their learning curve in life. And in whatever way you can support them to be successful in life, like having a good education, having good understanding of life, keeping to the Dhamma way or the righteous way. So these are your plans. In future, you will have parents who will also care for you, love you, sacrifice for you, give you the correct advice, support you in the correct way. This is what law of karma is all about. Then as children, respect for your parents is very important. Do you realize that? Yeah? Respect. That's why it's a good practice to pay respect to parents. Where they give you life, they bring you to the world, they support you, provide for you, sacrifice for you, care for you when you are sick, provide for your education, your livelihood, food and shelter, education, they care for your health and all those things. And it's very difficult to repay their kindness. There is a Mahayana teaching that say, even you carry both your parents on your shoulder for, I think, the whole lifetime, yet you cannot repay what they have done for you. And the Buddha say the only way to repay them is to teach them the Dhamma. If you do that, you more than repay them. So these are all very good advice. Okay, we move on to the second one. Duty of parents. Parents who are thus ministered to by their children should dissuade them from evil. Oh, this one not easier. Yun-chan, easier.
Dissuade them?
Dissuade your children from doing evil.
From?
Doing evil.
Oh.
Cantonese got a saying. No, Cantonese got a saying.
Depends on the upbringing.
No, the Cantonese got a saying. You are Cantonese. Zhong mei tai, your sin hao wai. So how to save from evil? So a lot of these sayings are quite true. When they are young, the easiest thing to learn is what? To become naughty. True or not? When I was young, I witnessed this. We were in the village. The first thing you learn about a dialect or another language is what? All the dirty words, the foul language, how to scold people.
Yeah, it depends on exposure. Because you were exposed to this.
It's not I exposed. It's meant to be. Because when I was born in Batuwal, I have a very good life until I was 6 years old. Then before I go to school, my father came back to Alastair where he bought the shop lot for 200 ringgit on. That area is a notorious area like Taikong. So that type of mind went into the environment. That's why later on I reflect that it's meant to be for me to see how that pure mind, that pure, beautiful, innocent mind become defiled and learn all the foul language. So 8 or 9 out of the 10 words sure about the whole language last time.
Yeah, because of the exposure to people around you.
No, our generation, all of that, we came from China.
Oh.
You don't go through that, huh? Maybe you are more fortunate. You are in KL.
I think my mother
Your mother.
My mother was very particular about.
Oh, very strict about this.
So we don't get exposed to.
Oh,
this,
okay. Maybe you are a girl. You are a girl. That's why you don't get involved in all this.
That's
what I said. We are all boys. I tell you, you are asking how we are.
the
even brother Tim also should know. Clank. Oh, when we were young, I tell you. We even carry this to the university orientation day.
Yeah, it is in from young you got your
no, because as a kid,
we
are more interested in excitement, adventure, and all those things. Because we don't know the Dharma, and nobody taught us. And it was fun, do you know that? Really fun. And those were the years that you really enjoy. You laugh. The laughter was genuine. And there was so much fun. But a lot of delusion, heedlessness. But that is what life is all about. You had to go through experience. That's why I understand what heedlessness is. Later on I grew up, then the condition arise, then I started to develop the understanding of the Dhamma. And when I understand the Dhamma, I look back, then I realize everything is meant to be. The condition just arise. Otherwise, you can't learn. You have to go through life. That's why life itself is the greatest teacher. Without life, you can never learn. Don't worry about how you are exposed, understand? Sometimes you can have terrible childhood. But that is the experience that will turn you around beautifully. Yeah. Sometimes you got too good childhood, it may actually be detrimental to your future. You become too pampered, understand? Everything also provided for. And your parents are so, in the word, inverted comma, they pamper you so much. They were very scared of you having problems. So everything also you don't need to do. Hire me, people take care of you. So you don't have survival skills, understand? You become dependent. For us, first generation kid, you think our parents got time for us? 9 children. You eat or don't eat also, they don't care. Because they themselves also busy and 9 of you. So a lot of things we need to survive ourselves. We need to do it ourselves. Where I look back, I saw 9 of my brothers and sisters, same parents, same environment, same, but all very different. And how I can study in that environment also is a miracle, real miracle. I do. Do you know my house? My father bought as a shop lot. In front, he do business shop lot. There is only one table. 9 of us, brothers and sisters, my mother, my grandmother, my father, 12 of us, eat on that table, breakfast, lunch, dinner, study also that table. Only one table, no? And hardly any chair. Got chair also, share on the long bench. Then, no room, you think of study room. My grandmother stay in one room. My mother stay in one room. 9 of us share the elevated bed, you know, the platform one. Long of the cock side, about 1.5 feet high, alaupan. Everybody squeezed inside there, rough it out. And my father had to, outside one. The folded one, not the jaga bangala, fan po chong. My father sleep outside with the fan po chong. That's how we survive. We all like sardine.
That is a very nice bed to sleep on. It's so cooling.
When you are a kid, you are contented. There is a lot of joy, a lot of fun. We play inside that. But when I grew up, when I went for my song, wow, how did I survive all this? How did I went through? And I really enjoy my childhood life. No? And I had so much fun. And every day we go out, we play, a lot of friends. And the gangster never come after me. Oh, that was a miracle, really. And a lot of things we experienced when we were young. All sorts of things I played before as a kid, which my kid never get to play. They are new generation. I saw the 50s, the 60s. Then when I went to school, it was 1961. 67, I was in secondary school. Then after that, I went to university 1975. I finished Form 6. That was what life is all about. And sometimes you look back, you realize all of this is meant to be karma, nothing else. I saw all my brothers and sisters, everyone, they have different karma. My parents, my grandparents, and my neighbors, and the people whom I know, even my classmates, my colleagues, and even your Kayamita. Everyone is so different. You also have your life. And how you evolve through, if you are mindful, aware, if you can understand condition, you will know why you are the way you are. The Buddha's teaching is beautiful. We are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, condition is part of our karma, and we are what we are because of our karma. That's why all these words strike me very, very deep. I was full of joy because I realized this is what life is all about. Then I know how to live. Then I am very sure of having the good life because I can feel I was different when I was young. I knew a lot of things is meant to be for me to understand. Then the condition will unfold. The thing will happen by itself. Meant to be will be. That's why the teacher come, the guy come, the book come, everything unfold. Then, like I didn't do anything. My nature just echo and flow, witness all this. Because it's all in the vow, in the aspiration, in the aditana that I have perfected. So all this understanding paved the way for my forming mind to come, life after life. Every time it come, there is already all the condition in place. No need to do anything because of the understanding. No. That's why I always share with you all. If you have to come, you better come with the Dhamma understanding, otherwise don't come. But you got no choice. You have to come. Have to come means law of karma insists that you have to come. But if you are a bodhisattva, you can choose to come. That's why you can wait for the timing, the condition, and you can set all this, and you will know the right timing to come. That's why you realize I was born after the Second World War, and not only after, 10 years later when all the education system is already in place, and born in the parent that I choose, in the environment that is most conducive for my segmented life or nature to arise. So all this is like meant to be. If my father didn't come out to Malaysia, that time Malaya, my mother cannot come out. Because my mother came out 6 years later. And I was not born in China. I was born immediately when my mother came out 1 year later, 1954. My mother came out in the year 1953. So all this is meant to be. A lot of things, the condition, you have to understand condition.
You took the bodhisattva vow. There could be quite a lot of people who become Arahant, so they don't have to come back.
It's not what you think, you just, because You may think a lot of people become Arahant and don't come back. I can tell you, most of you have the vow, but you don't know. Because your conditioned thinking. Because you have been lost for a long time during the non-sansana. And you all are not serious during the previous sansana. Like this sansana. Because of affinity, that's why you all get to understand this type of teaching, this type of sharing of the Bodhisattva way. And like Elsie used to say, everything already explained until so clear, you cannot understand. Means this window you are going to miss. And for you to have another such window is not easy. It's going to be a long, long way, a long home. But don't worry, where you got a lot of kayamita. All of this, if they become great beings, they may be better than my nature. Who knows? And then, future sasana, you still got chance. Then that time maybe, suddenly you bump into another segmental life of Jin Hao or Baba Sri or Buddha. But you don't know, understand? You still Yun Chan, contented with the Arahant way. That's what is happening. So a lot of things, if you don't go this way, you can never keep a breath with all those who go this way. Do you understand? And you go this way, there is so much meaning to life. And life is really wonderful. Because when you come with the understanding that this form of mind is not you, and with the Dhamma, you become so beautiful. You really get to live life to the fullest. You get to experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life. Why must you be contented with one life strive until almost 70, 80 years old, going to die, then become Arahant and finish? You understand? I'm not discouraging you. It's your choice. But there is no you. Do you understand? The form of mind is not you. That realization of Arahantship is not you. But that segmented life, that form of mind, when it awakens, the wisdom is connected to that form of mind. If after that you choose to cease, it's not you choose. It's because you don't know the other way. You don't have condition to go the other way. That's why while you have the understanding and the condition, make those vow. What have you got to lose? Even you make that vow, it doesn't mean you will go on that way, you understand? You have to stabilize it. You have to develop the sincerity, the faith, the perseverance. Then only that way you unfold. It's not what you think so easy. A lot of people during the Buddha's time, they cry because they can't go that way. And it's not easy. Because by that time you go into that stillness or Arahantship, if you have not cultivated those vow before, chances is become too steep. You can't pull out that pure mind, love and compassion deep inside. Your love and compassion for the living being, that vow cannot come out. Where you are contented with the sinful way. So it is a choice that the individual make. When I say the individual, means that form of mind. But that form of mind is not you, always remember. But every segment of the form of mind that comes, which one is you? There are eons and eons of birth and death each and every living being go through. Which one is you? None of them are you. So but don't be deceived and deluded by that, thinking that, oh, too long this way, I want to finish fast. That I, the ego that want to finish fast, will keep you in samsara for very long. So when you have the understanding, it becomes different. You will cultivate differently with the understanding. Then you leave it to nature, as long as you have done your best. Finish. After that, let nature decide. But if you can understand all this and see the importance and beauty, you will make that type of vow. No need to wait for people to advise you all. When I was young, when I made Aditana, I was very strong, deep in my heart, in my nature. It just come out. Yeah. That's how I made my vow. Even this life, certain condition arise, I will know. And I will ready my pure wish and I will deliver all this. It's deep inside your nature. When you understand that nature manifests, it is very different. It's not from the thought. Okay, we continue. We only reached the second part of the Sika Lohasa Sutta. We still got a lot to go. So did we finish the parable? Oh, not yet. Oh, this one very important. Dissuade them from evil. That one, if you have the Dhamma, you can. You don't dissuade. I would prefer the word advise. Then let them decide their life. Then persuade them to do good. No need to persuade. Teach them that life is like that. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. This is the law of karma. Nature's law, nothing to do with me. You don't have to believe me. And you find out yourself. You go through your life, then if you make mistake, you find out whether this is true or not. So the word shouldn't be persuade. Advice. Number three is very important. Teach them an art. What is it? Yeah, skill, understand? So whatever that they like to do, skill. Education is a very important skill, understand? And sometimes if they have special talent, let them, support them, provide for their whatever need. Let them develop their talent. Then the fourth one is also very important. This one, if your children don't want to get married, you cannot do. Give them in marriage to a suitable wife. Why must it be wife? Spouse. Means only men do. Ladies cannot do. Actually, here is different. The Sikalovada Sutta write different. Arrange for their proper marriage. You should arrange for their proper marriage. That's why during my time, my parents arranged for my marriage. They will ask me, then he said, is this the one that you are going to get married? I say, yeah. Then they say, okay, talk to the parent. Oh, they will come down and you ask my wife. Oh, they will arrange a date. During my convocation, we went for lunch, I think. Then my father with all the red paper and the black, all write down the date already. Say, we have chosen this date, auspicious date. Then ask my wife, my parent, you all okay or not? My wife, parent, very simple. Whatever you choose, sure, okay. Then after that, whatever, the marriage, how many table you want, and all those things. They arrange, understand?
It's normally now done by the bride and groom, they make that.
So now modern ones, no need to arrange. But depend on certain parent, old thinking on, you better pay your respect. You better go with your son or your children. But yes, it's a daughter, then they might wait for them to come. So normally it's the man's side, our Chinese culture. Arranging for their proper marriage is very important. Advise them. Marriage involves your entire life. They will be your spouse. So make sure this is the person you want to marry to. And make sure you understand what marriage is. So you can advise them, counsel them is very good. Do you know how to counsel your children on marriage?
We don't have to do that.
Oh, they are better than you.
They don't.
Do you know that other religion, they have to go for?
Yeah, Christians.
Not only Christian, the Islam also say you have to go. Buddhists also have.
Yes.
Huh?
We were taught the Sigalo Veda Sutta also.
Huh? Before marriage, oh.
Yes.
What do they teach you?
Be a wife. That.
No, no. What do they teach?
It's number 5, number 6.
No, read.
Number 5 and number 6. This one is already simplified, but in the...
No, this one you already husband. This is before marriage.
Yeah, we were told duties of a...
No, before marriage. Oh.
Yes. On the marriage day.
Oh, that's too late. They go for clothes before marriage.
The Christians.
No, the Muslims also same. They go for clothes. Got certificate. Otherwise, they won't allow their daughter to marry. So a lot of these things, actually, I don't know what they teach at the course. What do they teach? I heard BGF got the counseling. Huh?
Yeah.
No, that counseling is different.
Oh, different.
The BGF counseling.
Hey, pass the mic. The counseling
is different. The counseling is just to help people go through life so they don't have all these mental problems.
Oh.
It's not on marriage.
But
when they have a marital problem, then
they also can consult them.
They consult. But mental, any kind of mental problems, worries, illness, they help them.
I realize a lot of this so-called religious authority or religion that have this pre-marriage type of courses. Divorce seems to be higher. The one that Chinese tradition on lower, but they marry more. The unofficial. That's what the Chinese culture is all about. And I used to hear this. They say, do you realize among the Chinese, divorce rate very low? Do you realize that? Among all the races.
Not the highest?
No, you never study statistics. Huh? Very low. Yeah. That's why there was a discussion. They say, you really want to have a proper marriage, where you are sure that the chance of divorce is very low, marry a Chinese. They won't divorce you. They may keep. But the other one different. After 4, you have to divorce one. Otherwise, you cannot have a new one. There are a lot of other things, but not important. To me, it's law of karma. If you don't take care of law of karma, you go and do all this nonsense, then you yourself have to be responsible for your life. So for me, is more for the children, understand now. Before they get married, I advise a lot of Kayanamita and Buddhists, people who came and see me, seek my advice. The first question I ask them is, because some of them are not happy with their children's marriage, maybe to different race, to different religion and all. Then I ask one question, are you getting married or your children getting married? Well, then they suddenly realize, I say, your duty is to advise, understand? Then the advice is very important. Marriage is not something that you take for granted. It's a lifetime commitment, understand? You commit yourself to a marriage contract. You know what is a contract about? Buying both sides. And if the marriage doesn't go on well, if you need to break up or divorce, be very, very dramatic. It will affect you a lot. Then when you are married, you are not alone. Always remember that. And the other thing about marriage is, you must learn how to have the, what they call, understanding of marriage. So that this marriage has meaning. So that this marriage will not become a problem. So what is your understanding of marriage? First criteria is what? Both of you must be sincere. Means I am sincere to enter into this marriage contract. You are sincere. If both of us are sincere, then no problem in that. But because of the evil, there can still be a problem after marriage. So what you need to do is, you have to tell yourself, if you are a Buddhist, very easy. There is this law of karma. And according to the teaching, you really have to love your spouse. You have a duty towards them. All these are listed in Sila Govada Sutta. So if you follow this, you will not go wrong. Yeah. But a more modern and better approach is, if you are sincere to enter into this marriage contract, means you must trust each other. Correct? Once you have this trust, then both of us can continue with our good life and good relationship. That I trust you, you trust me. As long as we don't violate this trust, means you can do what you like. I will not be suspicious of what you do. You can still have your friends. You can still have your activity. You understand? I can still have my friends and my activity. Because we trust each other, I wouldn't be suspicious of you. And we have this Buddhist understanding, we will not do such thing. Understand? That's why this understanding is very important. So when you trust each other, you must understand that we are now no longer living life alone. You have to give and take. True. Support each other. 2 persons is better than 1 person doing. Understand? So whatever problem, you resolve it together, you support each other. Then in order to avoid misunderstanding and problem, your career, you decide. My career, I decide. You can advise me. You can give me advice or counsel me. But final decision is mine, because it's my career. Similarly, yours. Your money, you decide. My money, I decide. Understand? Not yours is mine, mine is also mine. Oh, that one cannot. So a lot of this, once you have the understanding, then you will not have this, what they call, possessiveness to control your spouse. Understand? Why so stupid? All the money go to your in-law then, parent then. Her money, let her decide. She wants to do. She wants to do charity. Let her decide. If you object and do all those funny things, the law of karma will hit back. In future, you will have a spouse that do the same thing to you. That's why from your good life, you know you have been good spouse before. You're very home, this life.
Okay.
What okay? You have never seen a husband so loving. Wow. Raymond really take care of her like anything.
He has his own life when
during the young. That's why it's very good. Take the mic. That's why it's very good. I say his life, he decides. That's why you give him freedom, and he give you like more freedom. You know, all the thing you do, I feel like Raymond support you. Very very beautiful spouse. That's why I saw the two. Really wonderful. Raymond is such a great husband. You are very blessed. I'm okay already. Shit. They say chichong already. Really, very beautiful. Yeah. And you can see that you have good life. In-law also treat you so well.
Good support.
That's why that is your karma. You reap what you sow. You have been parents who care for your children too. Like this life, you never force your children to do anything. Their life, let them decide. Then like you say, they are smarter than you. They plan their marriage, everything. So everything go on well. But when you start to interfere with delusion, with the egoic mind, then there is karma. So life is the way it is. You have to understand. Whatever you do, be aware of the consequence. So if you are aware of the possible consequence, you will never violate the nature's law. You will never put pressure on people, force people to do the thing that you don't want to do. You will learn how to resolve things amicably so that you don't hurt anybody. You will develop the understanding to have the good life. So sincerity leads to trust. Trust leads to mutual respect, mutual support. Yeah. Then you will have good life. Then whatever thing, discuss it, resolve it. Don't argue. The moment you start to argue means you get angry and emotional already. You understand? The egoic mind come out already. So if it's a problem, resolve it. 解决问题啊. Don't go and talk about the problem and become angry over the problem and point finger and scold. That is all violating noble eightfold path. Wrong view leading to wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, everything collapses. That's why you must have right view. You must have harmony. Follow noble eightfold path to resolve things amicably and move on. And have the good life. Life is wonderful, beautiful, meaningful. When you understand, when you start to argue, when you start to arise the ego, the evil roots, life is gone. Suffering will follow you, like the wheel that follow the food for the cat. You will never have the peace. But sometimes you marry a spouse who come and collect coming that one. Wow, that one come a lot. Siêu khiêm chi, học kiến. Trang trại vận trại, thấu trại,
chiên
trại vận chiến, vận chiến rất dễ dàng, họ không muốn vận chiến thì cái đó mới là cao. Những cái chiên trại vận chiến là you owe people the debt, pay the cash, pay back people. But I say some coming spouse don't want money on, they want to torment you, they want because what you did to them. Through this type of anger and hatred, they carry through the future birth, understand? Like Devadatta, he vowed life after the Bodhisattva. That's how they get themselves tied together until he becomes Samasambuddha. He also follow him to become Devadatta, and they were cousins of all. So a lot of these adhidhamma, you cannot simply make, especially our anger and hatred. Yeah, Yun Chan, you want to say something?
Yeah, with all his merits, Buddha, so much of virtues, he can get somebody who disliked him, and life after life will go after him.
No, Devadatta made that vow, not him.
Yeah,
not
I know, made that vow, but because he's so virtuous, so many lives he has been building his virtues, and yet somebody can make such a strong curse to go after him.
You know why? Because the golden pot was worth a lot of money. And Devadatta thought it was in his hand already. But who knows? The Bodhisattva came along, also self-banger. Then the grandmother and the grandchild, they saw this banger one. Then the grandchild insists that he wants the banger, because the grandchild wants the banger. Then he went and asked the Bodhisattva. He said, for this spot, how much banger can I get? Then the Bodhisattva was so sincere and honest. He looked, it's a golden pot. All my banger is not even worth a fraction of your pot. The old lady said, never mind, you just give him whatever he wants. This pot is yours. Oh, the Bodhisattva was so happy, he said, thank you so much. So he gave all the bangers, the grandchildren happy, the old lady happy, Bodhisattva happy, took the golden pot without the banger, without the burden, sailed across the river. Then the old lady come back the same way where Devadatta is, with all the banger with the children. Then he asked the old lady, where do you get all the banger? He said, just now I asked you the pot, not worth much. You can only give me a few bangles. But my grandchild need more. You say cannot. So I met another bangle seller. He said, that pot is made of gold, you see. All the bangle can give to us, and yet it's only a fraction of the cost of the pot. But we decide to give the pot and take the bangles. Then he asked, where did this merchant went? He said, just took the boat and crossed a river. And that time, you know, the boat that take 20 minutes or 30 minutes to reach there, then take another half an hour to come back, or sometimes 1 hour. So he couldn't chase up with the Bodhisattva, so he cursed him there.
Yeah, what I wanted to say was, his curse is so powerful, more powerful than his virtues.
Not more powerful. Virtues. No, nothing to do with Buddha's virtue, Yunjan. You get it wrong. When you make a vow, good or evil, that mind that has that very strong determination, good or bad also will fruit on. Do you understand? That's why all those criminals that have very strong mind, the willpower, they also can do funny things. Because of their willpower, they are very, very determined. So nothing to do with the Buddha's virtue and he can bring his No, it is his determination, that mind that has this. If he use it to aditan for Dhamma cultivation, I tell you, he sure Samasa Buddha faster than Sakyamuni. But he use it in the wrong way. He want to take revenge. He want to follow him, and not only that line of life after life, he make the vow.
He follow Jatapa's things, every time he meets he will be at longer
Yeah, longer. Because of that.
Every time also like that.
Because of that hatred, out of greed. Not only curse, it's a very strong vow, very, very strong vow. Because he was so angry, so much money, that pot is worth so much money. So he couldn't take it. So it's as if he was played out by the Bodhisattva. But actually nothing to do with the Bodhisattva playing him out. Well, he was not honest. That's it. But he doesn't want to admit that he was not honest. To him, is that pot should be his. If the Bodhisattva don't come along and do all this, or potong trip, it will be his. He think that way. That's a negative thought. So he was so angry. He make that. That's why when you make all this aditana, you don't play. Make sure it's virtuous and wholesome. Otherwise, you get into deep trouble. But you cannot say out of like. Sometimes people will think he is the Samasambuddha or Bodhisattva. His virtue, his vow so great. He can help Devadatta. Will you think that way? You think the Buddha is not compassionate enough to help you? Because that vow cannot be unlocked unless Devadatta asks for forgiveness. Understand? And remove that aditan.
But Devadatta, when he sees him, he's an enemy.
It's because he never asked for forgiveness. Understand? That vow is so strong, it cannot be amicably resolved. That's why it cannot be rooted out or tender theory. Never mind, we end. I just finish up. So it's not whether the Buddha is not compassionate enough to help him. All these great beings, do you think they are not compassionate? They are very, very compassionate, but they don't interfere. Do you understand? Like my nature, once you reach the cultivation, you will know. You will never interfere. Because no point, you understand? People are just the way they are. If there is condition, he will do something. If there is no condition, he will not purposely go all out and help him. He cannot. Because this is not what people want. It's just like I tell you, unless he want to be helped, don't bring him. You understand that sentence? I always advise Gayamita, they say, Pratyu, can I bring my friend? I say, who is your friend? Then they tell me the story, the problem. And then I say, you better check. unless they want to be helped, they really want to be helped, don't bring them. Otherwise, coming, keep back. No point. Unless there is condition. No condition, nothing happen. And I never interfere. I never try to help you to do things. No. I only share the Dhamma, finish. Then I will teach you how to do. The rest is up to you. Understand? So this is what great beings will do. Because they have this understanding of no mark. No mark of a self-cultivating. No mark of others. No mark of life or Dhamma. All this pertain to the existential world. So when you understand, no reality. You will not interfere. And the Diamond Sutta is very clear. Each year you wake up. Zhu mong huan tao yi. Zhu lu yi lu dian. Yin chou. Lu si gong. These four stanza, they are very profound. They say, each year you wake up means all things are conditioned Dhamma. They are like zhu mong. Dream like illusion, huan, bubble, and shadow. The description is so beautiful. Is the dream real? Is an illusion real? Is the bubble real? Is the shadow that follow you real? This is what phenomenal world is all about. Everything within the conditioned world is each and you wave up. It's like dreamland. And an illusion, shadow, bubble and a shadow. Zhu mong huan tao yi. Then, zhu lu yi lu dian. It's like the morning dew and a lightning flash. You know the meaning, right? Morning dew, how long does it last? And the morning sunrise, not long, it will dry out. Then the other very fast one is, like a lightning flash. Zhu lu yi lu dian. That's why I told you, future yet to come, not a reality. Past is already gone, also not a reality. So the present moment is only a reality. What are you doing? So a lot of people don't understand this. Because they are busy thinking, planning and worrying about life. They never live life. Then, how stable is the present moment? It's just like a lightning flash. This moment you talk about it, it's gone. Split second, it's gone. That is what the moment is. And that is the only reality in life. So how real can it be? That's why it is empty, impermanent, not what you think. Do you see that? The only reality in life is the present moment. And how stable is the present moment? The moment you look at it or talk about it is gone. Then how real can life be? Understand? The only reality also like that. Then why you still grasp, cling and hold and believe all these are real? That's why the wisdom cannot go in until you comprehend that, until you awaken to all this. That's why in the meditation, when I saw all this arising and passing of it, then when I was in the deep stillness and silence, then I saw all the creation. Then I come to realize that nature never moves. Like the Thursday class, this is the host. The rest are the guests. That's why the conditioned world is a phenomenal world of consciousness, no reality. Dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon, no reality. It's not a permanent and changing entity. And from there, everything unfolds, the Buddha's teaching. Through the understanding, you don't worry about sainthood and arahant. Very fast you awaken. But because your mind is not trained, not silent, not still, not able to comprehend all this, not able to awaken to all this. That's why the true meditation is just silent. Bring that photo on. Oh, that one very good. There, I was surprised they framed it out. I think a group of them. Miss Lee. No, this year he gave me. Last year one handwritten already. Huh? Look at what Sylvia. I put on the table. Huh?
Upstairs.
Oh, now my wife will get it. No, get it now. This one I better share because it's useful. I was very happy when she now, only now, she come to understand this, the real meditation. And he put there, Brother Theo. It's like that thing. It's like somebody that can come out with the truth. Like the Dhammapada, then you say Buddha. Dhammapada was one. This one he put Brother Theo. Because nobody write this before. The real meditation. Once you read that one, you understand what I mean just now. What I try to share with you. And this is the real understanding, the real meditation. This one can. Thank you. Can see, right? You no need to zoom. Need to zoom. Okay. Focus. Come. Can I? Very good. Come nearer. We can read together. He somehow go and look for this Buddha image. To meditate is to what? Silent your mind to be aware of the truth, the reality within the moment. He miss out within the moment. Aware of what is within your form and mind. It is through this awareness, which is beyond thought, beyond mind, that you can awaken the deal. He got it from Sunday class. Mm-hmm. I have been sharing this many times from Sunday class. That's why meditation is silent, not actively using the thought to meditate. That is not meditation. Okay, we end. So we will do the sharing of merits, transfer of merits. Then after that, you can make an aspiration. Akasata cha bhumata deva naga mahindika punyantam anumodhikva.